Midweek Wednesday style, you and I chatting on December 20th, 2023, right here on Connecticut Today. We open with my thoughts on a move to keep former President Donald Trump off of the Colorado 2024 Republican primary ballot. Landmark Legal Foundation attorney and analyst Mike O'Neill also shared his thoughts on that Colorado case. And we got our weekly update from Hearst Connecticut Media columnist and editor Dan Haar.
All right, so let's take a look at this with all due amount of calm, all due amount of cold reality as to what's going on here. Let's use a somewhat neutral story to talk about the Donald Trump situation being, at least for the time being, although the decision has been stayed by the same court that handed it down. The Colorado State Supreme Court. This is not the U.S. Supreme Court. A lot of you know this stuff, but I'm just repeating this for people who might not get into the minutiae like you and I do every day, 2 to 6. The Colorado State Supreme Court. Every state has its own Supreme Court, just like there's a U.S. Supreme Court. The Colorado State Supreme Court ruled 4-3. Late yesterday. In fact, I looked up and this happened literally in the last 2 or 3 minutes of our show. The Colorado High Court ruling 4-3 that former President Donald Trump is disqualified from serving as president and therefore cannot appear on the primary ballot in Colorado because of his role in the January 2021 attack on the U.S. Capitol by his supporters. So this is the Colorado State Supreme Court. There was a previous ruling on this. I'll give you the genesis of the case here. This is the Colorado State Supreme Court telling, I don't know, potentially hundreds of thousands or 1 million or 2 million voters, whomever, in Colorado, that they will not or they should not. Now, this is going to be appealed to the U.S. Supreme Court, but they should not or will not in any case have the chance to vote for Donald Trump if they want to or if he does go on to be, and by most appearances he will be, the nominee of the Republican Party for president. Now, the ruling is likely to go to the U.S. Supreme Court. It does make, though, Mr. Trump, says here in Reuters, the first presidential candidate deemed ineligible for the White House under a rarely used constitutional provision. Now, this is not talking about something that's in the Colorado state constitution. This is this aspect of the 14th Amendment that was put in there post-Civil War to basically prevent anybody who had a high-level position with the Confederacy from running for the White House or holding any sort of office, high office. Now, there's a couple of key things to go over here. And if any time you want to chime in on this, you can. I'll do at least an hour or so on this. Some of you may say, this is great. Others, like, if you think like me, this is kind of dangerous. And I don't care whether it's a Democrat or Republican or independent. We got to be very careful about this. Now, frankly, you know, I would prefer Donald Trump not be the nominee. But that's not the issue here. So the Colorado High Court reaffirms a lower court decision that found essentially, yes, there was a violation of this specific article from the 14th Amendment that alleged that Donald Trump engaged in an insurrection or rebellion. Now, nothing to the sort yet, and I stress yet, nothing yet of the sort has been found on a federal level. Now, there is a January 6th case that who knows when that's going to go to trial. They're talking about mid to late 2024, maybe 2025. Nobody knows. Yes, these things take time. Now, the ruling applies only to Colorado's March 5th Republican primary, but it could, it not necessarily will at this time, but it could affect the general election. So here you have the Colorado State Supreme Court saying, well, we're not sure about the general election here, but hey, you Republicans in the state of Colorado, and there are a lot of them, once you get out of, you know, Denver and Colorado Springs in some areas, there's a lot of Republicans in suburban Colorado, but like in a lot of states, they are outnumbered by the big blue cities. Now, nonpartisan U.S. election forecasters view Colorado as a safe Democratic state, meaning that President Biden is likely going to win. But now what observers are saying here is that this sends a message. Now, the Trump campaign said immediately, no surprise here, they are going to appeal this all the way to the Supreme Court. So what the Colorado State Supreme Court did is largely on effect until January 4th. The lawsuit is viewed, says here, yes, as a test case for a wider effort to disqualify Trump from state ballots under Section 3 of the 14th Amendment, which, as Reuters mentions here and as I mentioned previously, was enacted after the Civil War to keep Confederate supporters from serving in the restructured government. Now, the Colorado court concluded that the Constitution bars Trump. And understand something, there was no real trial here. There was no trial with witnesses and people who were at the Capitol that day on, in January or January 6th of 2021. There was no large scale trial here. There was no due process. The court concluded that the Constitution bars Trump, the front runner, from appearing on the ballot because of his role in instigating the violence at the Capitol as lawmakers met to certify the results of the election. Now, a lot of people may say, well, of course he instigated it. And you may believe that. A lot of people I know do. But there's been no due process or structured process yet. There may be, but there's been no structured process to say, yes, he did. Now, for the majority, the four justices who said, yes, keep him off the ballot, they said part of their majority decision reads thusly, quote, "We do not reach these conclusions lightly. We are mindful of the magnitude and the weight of the questions now before us. We are likewise mindful of our solemn duty to apply the law without fear or favor and without being swayed by public reaction to the decisions that the law mandates we reach." Now, the dissenting justices also, remember, this was 4-3. This wasn't 7-0. This wasn't 6-1. It wasn't 5-2. It was 4-3. Not unusual. Look how many national Supreme Court cases are 5-4. Rarely you'll get a 6-3 or 7-2. Here's my problem with this. One of the dissenting justices, Justice Carlos Zamora, wrote a lengthy opinion saying that the lawsuit is not a fair mechanism for determining Mr. Trump's eligibility. Here's what he said. And I made the mistake. I couldn't hold back. I went on a couple of discussion boards today and I copy and pasted. I said, but read what this justice said. This is why it's dangerous. And of course, in response, rather than get involved in a somewhat structured conversation, many of the progressives on the side I went on called me a maggot, M-A-G-A-T, instead of, you know, M-A-G-O-T, the baby fly, a maggot, a Trump, you know, well, you're a no-good maggot. Trump is in your wet dream. Sieg Heil. I mean, this is the level of stuff you get from many on the left. When you try to simply say, hey, be careful what you wish for here. This is not a good idea. And all I did was give them these couple of sentences from Justice Carlos Samor, who sits on the Colorado State Supreme Court. Quote, and here's, to me, this is the summation of why this is pretty dangerous. Quote, even if we are convinced that a candidate committed horrible acts in the past, dare I say, engaged in insurrection, there must be procedural due process before we can declare that an individual disqualified himself from holding public office, or we can declare that individual, I should say, sorry, disqualified from holding public office. Again, just to be fair to the justice here, let me read it without butchering it. Dry lips today. Even if we're convinced that a candidate committed horrible acts in the past, dare I say, engaged in insurrection, there must be procedural due process before we can declare that individual disqualified from holding public office. I agree with that. I would say that if this was an effort in a red state, in a conservative state, to keep Joe Biden or Gavin Newsom or anybody else, any other Democrat, Dean Phillips or whomever, Marianne Williamson, off of the ballot. This is dangerous. This is dangerous. Now, we all know why this happened. Joe Biden's poll numbers suck. I mean, it's bad. Now, I know there are people saying, hey, they're going to come home come election day if Trump's the nominee on the Republican side. Maybe they will. I still think that might happen. But right now, Joe Biden's poll numbers stink. His vice president, Kamala Harris, went on MSNBC last night, and she let loose with a different word salad about every 20 minutes or half hour. If I get to the exit, she said stuff last night. It's just, Madam VP, what in the hell are you talking about? So this, again, like I said, the Dems, are now that we're getting toward the end of the year into early 2024, if they don't see these numbers change radically, even if it might not happen come election day, they're going to be in break glass moment. In case of emergency, break glass, pull lever or lever, as the Brits say. Yes. So listen, am I saying that these justices on the Colorado State Supreme Court, in affirming or giving an appellate decision on another case, we'll get to that momentarily, are they actively trying to alter an election? No, they probably wouldn't say that. But as it said earlier in this Reuters story, people knew the process would likely begin somewhere. And they've tried this in other states. It hasn't worked yet. So the only reason this bothers me, and it should bother you, whether you're a Democrat or Republican, it should bother you. If you're going to say somebody cannot appear on a ballot, that's pretty serious. And before we go to the break here, just here's the one question you have to ask yourselves. Shouldn't that be based on solid evidence through a definitive legal chain and due process? You don't think now this will help Trump solidify his numbers even more? You don't think his fundraising is going to spike even more over the next day? All right, back to open phones momentarily. And when we do that, it'll be at 203-333-9422, 333-WICC. Guy that clears up all the legal haze for us from time to time, especially when it deals with the Supreme Court, the federal court, the state Supreme Courts. Mike O'Neill, Landmark Legal Foundation, is with us to talk about what the Colorado State Supreme Court said late yesterday, right as we were wrapping up. Mike, it's Paul here in Connecticut. How are you, sir?
I'm well. Good afternoon, Paul. Merry Christmas.
You too, Michael. Thank you. And so walk us through this now. The Colorado Sure. State Supreme Court weighed in on a previous court ruling. They kind Right. of found the same thing, but the state Mm-hmm. Supreme Court went a step further here. So break this down.
Right. So there was a couple, I think it was probably a month or two ago, the court of first impression, the trial court in Colorado, found by clear and convincing evidence that Donald Trump had engaged in insurrection regarding his behaviors on January 6th and his tweets and his speech, all surrounding that event. However, they also found that the office of presidency of the United States was not encompassed in the 14th Amendment. So therefore, there was a movement. Let's back up. There was a movement under the 14th Amendment, Section 3 of the 14th Amendment, to have President Trump disqualified from serving as president. Mm-hmm. So these private parties wanted to have his name removed from the ballot in the primary ballot in Colorado and also in subsequent ballots in the state of Colorado. So the trial court held this, refused to follow their demands. They concluded that he engaged in an insurrection, but they did not conclude that the presidency was contemplated under this provision of the 14th Amendment. Well, then this decision was appealed to the Colorado Supreme Court. So just like you said, Paul, the Colorado Supreme Court took it a step further. They said that the lower court erred when they concluded that he was not an officer, that the office of president was not contemplated. So therefore, A, they agreed with the lower court's decision that he engaged in insurrection, and B, the office of the presidency is contemplated under Section 3 of the 14th Amendment. Therefore, they sought to disqualify President Trump from appearing on the ballot under Section 3 of the 14th Amendment.
So, Mike, let's take this a step further. Now, there are people
Sure.
I know, some people hate this, some people are turning cartwheels, but in fact, we haven't even gotten trial dates yet or anything. On a federal level, Mike, there's been no adjudication of due
Right.
process on this. And so we have two courts in Colorado, and I know they were reacting to some advocacy group, but this is just their opinion, right? They sit back and issue a decision here.
Well, it was a trial per se. Now, it wasn't a full trial.
Yeah.
It was an abbreviated proceedings that occurred under a section of the election code that allows individuals to challenge. Now, this section of the Colorado election code with this proceeding was designed to handle easier issues. Let's talk about like whether I'm, you know, 35 years or old,
yeah.
or
yeah.
age, a simple fact, or whether I'm a resident of Colorado, something not a complex factual legal matter, mm-hmm. which would have all the accoutrements of a full trial. This was an accelerated process. So there's a lot of problems with the lower court's decision. And again, subsequently, those problems attached to the Colorado Supreme Court's decision. But let's also talk about at base what this decision is. The Colorado Supreme Court essentially disenfranchised the millions of voters who were poised to vote for Donald Trump in a presidential primary.
Yeah.
They took that decision out of the hands of the voters, and that's fundamentally flawed with their decision.
Mike, and I know we don't know what these, you know, justices are thinking on the state level, but this almost, Mike mm-hmm. O'Neill, to me, is kind of a break glass moment, you know, in case of emergency, break glass. Now, they've been trying to do this in other states
right.
to no avail so far, and 2024 is approaching, and Mr. Trump is still, there's a new poll out today at Quinnipiac, not too far from us, still
right.
a statistical dead heat. So in a lot of ways, Mike, this doesn't really surprise me at all.
No, it's not surprising, but it's tragic. And it's a dark day for America because it's the weaponization of yet another provision in our Constitution. Look, I can't help but think of the impeachment process. Years ago, when I was younger, I saw the Clinton impeachment process.
Mm-hmm.
It was big news, right?
Yeah.
Everybody was focused on it. It was really a big deal. Well, by the time the second impeachment of Donald Trump rolled around, it was barely front page news.
Nobody cared.
The process had been mm-hmm. politicized. Well, now you have politicized, you have weaponized Section 3, this obscure provision of the 14th Amendment that was heretofore has never been used, right? This is a provision that was passed in the wake of the Civil War and the Reconstruction era, was intended to apply to Confederate soldiers and Confederate politicians and individuals who waged a rebellion against the United States in the Civil War. Well, now you've weaponized this obscure provision, and you've set a very dangerous precedent. Now, can you allege, now can we see questions that, Kamala Harris and advocated or supported the BLM individuals who engaged in their protests. Rashida Tlaib, when she was talking about supporting the Hamas and the pro-Palestinian protesters who shut down the Capitol just a few weeks ago. Now that you see you've opened this Pandora's box and you've weaponized this, we've crossed a Rubicon that we can't get past now. And that's why it's really dangerous. In their blind hatred for Trump, you see the left has burned these constitutional provisions down.
Mike O'Neill is with us, Landmark Legal Foundation. So, Mike, now we go to the Supreme Court. Apparently,
right.
Mr. Trump's campaign is taking it there. Now, number one,
right.
We need a certain amount of justices first, Mike, right, to say, hey, do we have to weigh in on this? Let's go
right.
around the table. So how does this process work?
Right. So they're going to petition for certiorari, and that's going to be coming sooner rather than later. I think by late next week, the Trump folks are going to be asking the court to take up the case. And then it's really the schedule is really in the hands of the Supreme Court. Traditionally, the individuals who are supporting the decision of the other side of the table, the people who are supporting the Colorado Supreme Court's decision, would traditionally argue, hey, court, don't take this case for such and such reasons, and they'd have 30 days to respond to that. I don't know whether the briefing process is going to be accelerated and the entire process is going to be accelerated. Again, I think back to 20-plus years with the Bush versus Gore events and how everything really got fast-tracked.
Yeah.
If you can remember some of the stuff, and that all came fast and furious. So I anticipate this coming a lot faster and furiouser than we're used to with the Supreme Court.
Mike, and I know it's uber early on this,
oh, yeah.
but you watch this for a living. We've talked about this for years now on my show. Let's assume there's enough justices who say, hey, we have to do something here. Any idea on how they might rule here? Because
yeah.
I could see, Mike, if in any way, shape, or form they said, yeah, Colorado, you can do this. I mean, you talk about sand in the gears of the election process. What's your gut tell you on this?
Right. Okay. So this is how I boil it down to is assuming that their arguments, the other side's arguments, have as much water as they think they do, are as viable as they think they are. Well, it's indisputable that our side's arguments, the arguments that Section 3 of the 14th Amendment does not apply here, all of the arguments that we have are also viable. So if you weigh the arguments, say they're 50-50, well, the default position here on courts is actually a judicial canon.
Mm-hmm.
Well, if it's a very close case, you're going to defer to the political process. Therefore, you're going to say, okay, we're not going to disenfranchise people. If you're making good arguments, and they're good, you know, assuming they have good arguments on
yeah.
the other side. Assume they have good arguments. Assume we have good arguments. It's a close call. Well, the deference must be paid to the political process in these sorts of cases. And so you would presume that the court would weigh in that favor and say, look, it's ultimately incumbent upon the people of the state of Colorado to make this decision. His name should appear on the ballot. He cannot be disqualified because both sides have decent arguments. We're going to defer it to the political process.
One final question, Mike. One or two justices that could be the tipping point here? Anybody come to front of mind or not?
I'm anticipating. You've seen a couple of things floating around. I really think it might be a big one for favor of ensuring that Donald Trump is not disqualified. You might see an 8-1, 9-0 decision.
Really?
I really believe this. They do not want to. They do not want to interfere with the political process. This is again my gut, and Paul. Mm-hmm. You know, I can't definitively 100%.
It's like picking football. It's like picking football games. Oh, I get it. I understand.
Absolutely,
yeah.
But they cannot be perceived as if they have an exit ramp, and the exit ramp is, hey, the American people know all this. He was impeached, but he wasn't thrown out of office for his actions here. There's all kinds of questions. There's good arguments on both sides. We got to let the political process play out. That's actually the best way to do it, really, from a constitutional perspective, because it gives a release valve to the people. Can you imagine if the people of Colorado are essentially disenfranchised? You're throwing a match on a powder keg. All of the other things that Trump supporters have had to swallow over the past 3 years. So now, on top of all that, now you're telling these people that they can't vote for their selected candidate. Imagine that. That's just a bridge too far. So I got to believe that the Supreme Court's going to say, hey, look, this is a political question. We're going to let the political process play out.
Mike O'Neill, as usual, great stuff. Breaking this down for us, Landmark Legal Foundation. Check it out, folks, online, landmarklegal.org. Mike, thank you. Have a happy holiday season. We'll talk down the road. Thank you, sir.
Take care, Paul. Merry Christmas.
You too. Merry Christmas. Mike O'Neill, one of the attorneys there, Landmark Legal Foundation. All right, we'll get back to open phones. More about this Colorado thing coming up. Landmark Legal Foundation attorney Mike O'Neill, one of our Supreme Court and federal court and state court legal eagles, will be coming up with that. First, though, you know, we usually talk to this gentleman at the 5:15 break on Wednesdays, but he's got a busy schedule today, so we will welcome him in right now. Dan Haar, Hearst Connecticut Media editor and columnist, among other things. Dan, it's Paul. How are you, sir?
Great. Good afternoon. Great to be here.
Well, thank you, Dan. From the road, I see, in Mobile One on the road, which is always good. That's a broadcasting thing. Here. Let's go to Dan Haar in Mobile One, and it sounds good. Hey,
I'm on the Mass Pike.
Oh, I've made that drive numerous times going to do college hockey games. Yeah. And that can actually be a nice drive, Dan, depending upon the time of the year and the time of the day.
I'm paying tolls to another state when we should be collecting tolls from them.
Oh, boy, here we go. So let's talk first. What did do I see Governor Lamont met the media, Dan? What's up with that?
Well, he's had a couple of outings in the last couple of days. The first was yesterday at the Middlesex County Chamber of Commerce, which, strangely, I've never heard of anything like it, but our friend Mark Kosniokas at the Mirror pointed out that it wasn't in Middlesex County. It was at the Rocky Hill Sheraton, so which is in Hartford County. I have, in 40 years of doing this, I've never heard of a Chamber of Commerce having a meeting outside of its jurisdiction.
Technicalities, you know.
So in any case, that he had that, and he told a little bit of an off-color, not off-color, but a strained joke, which either did or didn't go over well, and then there was a little backlash to that today. So a little bit of excitement there. I could explain it.
Yeah, sure, please, because I saw, you know, a friend of mine at the Capitol sent this to me, goes, get a load of what Lamont said, and I go, well, that's pretty interesting, but explain for the audience what happened.
Well, what he said, and this is based on reporting, I was not there, but my colleague Ken Dixon reported it, as did the aforementioned Kosniokas. And what he said was that he's looking to get the electric vehicles bill moved forward in some form this year, mm-hmm. and that he's allocating $300 million for the mental health of people who are fearful of range anxiety, to help range anxiety, right? And of course, he in one joke, he insulted the mental health community. Jeez. And the opponents of electric vehicle mandatory ramp up. So he managed the 2-for-1.
Now, do we actually, I mean, has anybody said anything, Dan, yet? Or are we going to, like, give the governor a break on this? I mean, I could see being goofy. I get it. I understand. Did anybody, like, formally say that's not good as far as we know or not?
Well, in our story, Vin Candelora, the Republican leader of the House, mm-hmm. did point out that he thought it was in really poor taste. And then today, Representative Holly Cheeseman, there were Republicans and Democrats at a press conference today to celebrate the fact that the big bipartisan tax cut is taking effect on January 1st, which, of course, is good news for everybody. So why shouldn't both parties be there? So to celebrate that fact, and Holly Cheeseman gets up, and before she gives her remarks, she turns to the governor and says, I think a lot of us are feeling very good in our mental health today. And Holly is a Republican, a moderate Republican.
Yeah, yeah.
And so, like all Republicans, she's probably, I haven't talked to her about it, but she's probably not in favor of the mandatory phase-in of electric vehicles. So that was a little barb. I think what you're saying is, should it go further than that? I don't know that it should.
No. Hey, maybe, you know what, Dan? Maybe it's that the governor feels a little looser now that he has apparently stopped coloring his hair. We talked about this, and maybe he's just, I don't know, maybe he says, hey, the heck with it, I'm not going to apologize anymore. I don't know. But he does look better, I think. I think it looks better.
No, the brown hair is back. The brown hair is back.
Oh, come on, is it?
Yeah, the brown hair is back. You blink and you missed it.
Oh, no. I got to find a picture. Dan Haar is with us, Hearst Connecticut Media. Dan, you probably heard maybe a little part of my intro to you in the earlier parts of the show. Presidential politics, Another new poll came out, at least at this point. It's still a dead heat. We've got this Colorado thing now. Here comes the Supreme Court, maybe. Trump probably is going to raise more money on it. What are your thoughts on this?
Well, first of all, I want to say that I think it's a disgrace. And this is not a partisan statement. I could imagine supporting some Republicans in the race. Mm-hmm. And certainly I can respect all of the Republicans in the race except for Donald Trump. I think it's a disgrace that this man is in public life. This is a human who is running around not just once, not just twice, but three times, quoting Adolf Hitler in a white supremacist, racist statement that immigrants from Asia, Africa, and Central America are poisoning the blood of Americans. For all the things that this man has done in public life, I cannot imagine a person supporting this cretin, this human cancer. He needs to be wiped out of the human race and put out of, let alone the White House. And I say that as a person who I wouldn't be overjoyed to see Nikki Haley win over a Democrat, but a respectable candidate who holds respectable views, some of which I actually agree with and like. You know, even the guy from Florida whose campaign is sinking, DeSantis,
yeah.
You know, can the Republicans please bring in a human and someone who's not quoting from Adolf Hitler? And so I would be happy to see an action similar to Colorado and Connecticut. There is no such action underway now, as you know, nor do the Democrats have a very good candidate in Joe Biden.
Mm-hmm.
He's got five strikes against him. Any one of the five could derail his presidency. Five.
Yeah.
You want to go through them?
Sure. You got time. Go ahead.
Immigration.
Yeah.
The wars.
Uh-huh.
Inflation. Hunter Biden. And his age.
Yeah. Yeah.
Any one of the five could derail a presidency.
So, Dan, so why do you think? And you pulled no punches about your dislike for Donald Trump, and you echo what a lot of my friends say. How is he still getting, depending upon the poll you look at, Dan, 45, 46, 47, 48, 44? I mean, it's roughly half the country. Are they just not paying attention, or is this more a blank you for what happened with, you know, the Russia investigation, the Ukraine investigation? Is this more anger than clear thinking? Because I haven't figured it out yet.
Well, nobody's figured it out, but it's a combination of factors. Number one, he's very good at what he does. He's a consummate liar, and he's very, very good at it. He has poisoned the well. Speaking of poisoning, he has poisoned the well of American public discourse such that nobody who trusts him believes anything that's said about him. And so that's one thing. The number of people who are educated who are supporting Donald Trump is relatively low. It's not zero. It's not insignificant. I'm not going to say that all of his supporters are uneducated. Certainly all of his supporters are not stupid. But there does tend to be an inverse correlation between people who have a college degree and people who support mm-hmm. him. And there is a correlation, not necessarily a direct hit, but a correlation between people who are educated and people who are thinking through morally and in respect to policy, what they would like to see. Thirdly, he's good for the Republican Party. Look at Lindsey Graham's comments this week. You know, Lindsey Graham on one of the Sunday shows when asked about the Hitler quote, and this is a direct quote from Adolf Hitler. I read it last night. I spent an hour reading Mein Kampf. I could send it to you.
Wow.
And so it's I shouldn't say it's a direct quote. It's using those same words.
Okay.
To give the same message, right? I don't have it in front of me right now. I'm driving, but it's enough connected to Hitler that nobody could deny it, right? What he's saying and what Hitler said are using the same words, poisoning the blood of our country. In other words, both people are saying in sentences
mm-hmm.
that immigrants are poisoning the blood of our country, using those actual words. So Lindsey Graham says, well, he waves it off and he says, I don't like the way he uses words, you know, that sort of thing.
Yeah, I saw that. Yeah, yeah.
Right. But it's one thing to say in Charlottesville in 2018 or 17, there are fine people on both sides. That's using words, right? But even if you're not paying attention to the individual words mm-hmm. that this former president is using, it is impossible to interpret what he is saying in any way other than that he is a white supremacist. To say that immigrants from, his words, Africa, Asia, and Mexico are poisoning the blood of America, what can that possibly mean other than a fealty to the white race? It cannot have any other meaning. So it's not simply a matter of his words, it's a matter of his ideas and his underlying morals as a person. Unless you happen to believe that the white race is supreme, in which case, knock yourself out and vote for your guy. He is Donald Trump.
On that note, Dan Hart, thank you. Now, listen, drive safely wherever you're going. I am off next week, so we will speak again the week after, sir.
Have a great holiday, Christmas, and New Year, and we'll be back.
All right, Dan, thanks. Two hands on the wheel. Dan Hart there, Hearst Connecticut Media editor and columnist. And listen, Dan didn't hold back. He said he's right to a point. He's right. You know, Mr. Trump uses this language, and I say to myself, well, this one's going to hurt, and his numbers never shift. So whatever happens in November of 2024, we're going to be reading about this election 10, 20, 30, 40 years. Well, 40 years, I probably won't be reading about it. You might be if you're a youngin' or your kids or your grandkids or whatever. But, and I haven't gotten to these new Quinnipiac numbers, but the numbers don't budge. The numbers don't budge.